97, I think.
I think it's like 92, maybe.
Because 93. Tomas Holmstrom was the last one.
Oh, was he 96, though?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wasn't he the...
I said 97.
Dear.
Dude, I was saying that like over and over.
Dude.
The roller coaster is about to begin. You know, hold on tight, because this is the big time.
That's my Irish music. St. Patrick's Day.
It's good.
Right?
I don't know. Not
is
yet.
It?
Not
tomorrow?
Yet. Yeah, tomorrow.
Tomorrow, St. Patrick's Day. That's cool. You guys doing anything fun for St. Patrick's Day? Is that amateur night? What's the deal? Where do you guys stand on that? Do you go out?
I think
neither of you are drinkers. But
no, this is it's not. Yeah, plus, it's a Tuesday night.
Well, what about... tonight, as we record this, which is the weekend prior,
I made shamrock butter cookies.
What there, that is? There you shamrock have cookies.
Irish butter. Make butter.
Oh,
cookies.
I've seen that Irish butter.
Yeah, $5 for two sticks.
Really? It's a rip, huh?
You got to drop a few bucks if you want to celebrate that way, I guess. But that's how it goes.
Your boobs are big. Your butt is small, but still, you're in for quite a fall.
Oh boy!
Oh god!
This is happening.
What is
this week,
leprechaun huh? soundboard?
Is this, which leprechaun is that?
Hey, Tubby, you got a light for an old leprechaun pipe?
Ridiculous!
All right, that's enough. This is going to happen all day.
That's enough. Of that.
There's no end to this.
might as well. Might as well make a further mockery of the day itself.
Yeah, I would say that. I like St. Patrick's Day even less than New Year's Eve, if for no other reason than there's no Pitbull special on St. Patrick's Day. But yeah, both are just excuses for a-holes to go out and get drunk. There's nothing attractive about it for me.
Do you listen to Thin Lizzy? Do you get any sort of like, you know what, I'm in the mood for Thin Lizzy just because it's an Irish-related thing, or not particularly?
Not really.
No.
I'd be more inclined to listen to some Black Star Riders.
Oh, see,
their
go.
New album is excellent.
I'm gonna have
that,
to.
That's
check
a
that
solid
out.
Band.
You pathetic fools! You thought you could outsmart me, the genius of Killarney.
They should just cut it after like the one
you
phrase.
Pathetic fool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Next time. Next time.
You know, they're always taking it a step too far.
It's funny. Our dad really likes those movies.
Do you know there's going to
be... What movies?
The leprechaun movies.
I didn't know there were leprechaun movies.
That's what this is.
I didn't know what...
Those horror movies?
They're like...
Ever heard of them.
What?
B-horror movies
from
the 90s?
The first one was a legit like major release.
Right. The fact that everyone always points out is that Jennifer Aniston's first movie was Leprechaun.
Yeah. Never heard
but
of
then
it.
They wow. made a bunch of sequels like Leprechaun in Space,
yeah,
Leprechaun in the Hood, and like
yeah,
all these silly...
Yeah, and like someone swallows a gold piece, so of course he's going to try to rip their stomach open and take the gold
he
piece.
He wants his
it.
Gold.
Yeah, it's...
Leprechaun 4, Dark Territory.
I want me go!
He wants his gold.
This is all new to me.
Yeah.
Thankfully, he eluded my radar. Not that I would even consider viewing one of these movies.
I think you'd like them. You like all, like...
Well, it's Astronaut's Wife is one of Chris's all-time favorites.
But he likes all those Steven Seagal movies. It's like the same thing, but with a leprechaun in it.
Yeah, isn't it like a horror movie?
Yeah.
I don't like horror movies. I like action movies. There's a difference.
Born in hell, you little green bastard!
That one was good.
Yeah, sure, that was fine. But no, I mean, there's a difference between like Seagal and Bronson movies and horror movies. I'm not really into horror movies.
Me neither. I don't like that stuff.
I'll third that.
It scares me.
Yeah, I don't know. It
makes me mad.
Makes you mad?
Went to see a movie, action movie at the theater, and apparently the trailers now, they're playing like R-rated trailers if you go to an R-rated movie.
Oh, really?
At least that's what happened at this one. They're playing some really terrible-looking horror
movie.
They
say things like fudge in it?
Yeah, they say fudge.
let all that stuff fly.
Yeah, they had like the Hot Tub Time Machine 2 trailer, and they were letting it fly in that trailer. So,
wow.
So yeah,
enough's enough.
Notice John Cusack didn't participate in that sequel.
That's probably an improvement.
Right? Yeah. Exactly.
That's the worst.
I never saw that.
I just don't
never,
care for
never
it.
Saw it. Have no desire.
John Cusack and Nicolas Cage are in the same category for me. Any movie they're in is instantly ruined by their presence.
I don't mind Cage so much.
He's terrible.
Face Off? Come
terrible.
On. Classic.
Dreadful. I think that if...
Leaving Las Vegas?
I never saw it. That's I heard it's one. Great, though, but I've never seen it. What's that one movie? There's two of them. American
Raising
Book
Arizona.
Of Secrets or whatever.
Raising Arizona is great.
I haven't seen that. What's those where he's like going...
Moonstruck.
Stop it. The one where he's...
The Family Man.
Quit it. The
he's
mailman.
In Fast Times at Ridgemont High, too.
That's right. Nicholas Coppola in that movie.
Yeah.
I knew that. Those fucking movies where he's like... He gets like the Declaration of Independence.
Oh,
and
National Treasure.
Yeah.
Those are fantastic.
They're good movies, but I feel like if they had anyone else in it, they'd be great movies.
They are both great movies.
If they had like Harrison Ford or someone.
Oh, just watch them.
I just named a random name, but like a more.
No, you're not going
like,
to get me
I'm
to
just thinking Indiana Jones.
About Harrison Ford.
Anything to keep Harrison Ford out of the cockpit of a plane would
right.
probably be a good thing.
You're not going to get me to say anything.
Like, listen, bad. You old bastard. Quit flying planes. Okay.
He's just tempting fate.
Jesus Christ.
Especially those types of plane. It wasn't like a World War II plane that
rebuilt
thing.
Replica.
Yeah, or whatever. Yeah.
Took it out of a bottle.
Started
just stop flying planes, you old ridiculous bastard. Jesus. And another thing is witnesses commented that the left turn signal on the plane was continuously on just before the crash.
Born in hell, you little green bastard!
I told that joke to somebody else. It went over well instantly.
I don't know. I don't get it. I'm sorry.
You know, old people leave their fucking blinkers.
What have you?
I thought it was from a movie. I thought movie reference something. I don't know. Okay.
What the hell are you doing?
I missed it. That was on me.
No, wasn't that great of a joke. But I will say the first person I told that to, it went over pretty well instantly.
You got to assess the crowd you're working to. The
of course,
Jones
he was kind
boys.
Of drunk, the guy I told it to at the time.
So. Jones boys are largely clueless.
Pretty much.
To social humor.
So, let's move on. No one cares about St. Patrick's Day, apparently. That's what we found out. Nick's got a little blue bag over there, and I'm not talking about the one in his shorts. The little one next to you on the end table there. It's a gift that was dropped off last week, but we didn't do Pot of Thunder last week.
It
so
says it's for me.
And also, I was told that that contains this week's item that reveals the song.
Good, because I did not bring anything.
Well, perfect.
Well, what? You didn't bring anything?
No.
How the fuck
well,
was
I,
the song?
I communicated this to Nick before.
Oh, you did? Okay.
So
well,
I said there's a gift for
plus
you.
Plus, I didn't have time. I was making cookies. So.
Irish butter. Are they really? It's green?
No, it's not green, it's but it's higher fat content.
Higher whiskey content, too, probably. Drunk bastards.
So I got a bag here, and this is from Rich, right, who made an appearance a few weeks ago.
One more thing about the Irish butter. You want to hear?
I do, of course.
I heard that it's the length of the typical Irishman's cock, so therefore it's just a pat of butter.
It's a tablespoon.
Yeah.
I like that. I was actually ready to play a sound clip, but I'm not going to because I liked it more.
Oh.
I thought I would.
Better than the blinker joke.
The blinker joke was funny. It was just Nick and I were being a tough crowd on purpose.
No, it wasn't on purpose.
Oh, I was.
I honestly was trying to figure it out. Million miles a minute here. Nothing registered. So
it happens.
I got something here from Rich that it's actually something I don't have.
How about that?
I have got the Demon Celebra Duck.
What the hell's that?
It's a line of, if you guys want to check out on the back here,
I
haven't
heard of this either.
It's a line of little rubber duckies, bath ducks, that have different characters. And I have seen this online, and I think I saw it at the convention someone was selling.
Now, are these relatively new? I've never seen these
either. No, I think they've been around.
These are cool.
Years.
The Celebra Duck.
Yeah.
Are there some other celebs on the back?
There's a Mr. T duck.
Read me
the Mr. T. There's a Wizard of Oz gang.
I've seen a Groucho Marx one somewhere.
I see what looks to be the leather-clad guy from the Village People.
Wow.
It's a weird celebrity.
Only the one guy?
Very strange.
That should be a set.
Yeah, the construction worker would be good.
Yeah.
You know, for the gay kids out there.
Sure.
They need role models, too.
Sure, why not? You know, it's 2015.
Get with it.
Yeah. Got a long letter from Craig Wolf, the president of his company, on the back of the box.
Good for him to take the time out.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Nice piece.
Thank you, Rich. I'm gonna
wonder why he chose the demon.
I don't know if that's the only Kiss one that they have. I want to say
I could see
the
that.
Four logos on
it
the
does.
Side.
It does. Yeah, true. Not this is the only one anything. I've ever seen, so I don't know. But it's cool. He's got the what looks like the I don't know, the I Love It Loud armor.
Yeah.
I Love It Loud video armor on there.
Yeah, this is a nice
which
piece.
I'm definitely into.
It's a real
maybe that's
piece
a good
too.
Sign. Maybe we'll get a Creatures track. Maybe Rich brought some special sort of mojo in here. Thank
hey,
you, Rich.
Man, we want to keep the momentum going. We've had a good streak going here.
So this is excellent, actually.
So where is the name of the song, do you think? Inside the packaging? On the actual
I think
rubber
I
got to
look at the bottom of the duck, maybe.
Under the duck's tail?
The duck's little blowhole in the bottom.
Or which, of course, in this case, would be Gene's little blowhole.
I'm
going to
look at Gene's little blowhole here. That's very cool. And it's funny. His nose has got the yellow nose, which is sort of reminiscent. He's got like a duck beak. Reminiscent a little bit of the Ankh sign on his face.
Oh, really?
Ooh, good connection there.
And he's got, and it looks like the I Love It Loud armor. I am really optimistic today.
So that would be cool if they had a Vinnie Vincent version.
That would be
Ankh Warrior rubber duck.
That would be cool. I'd get it.
I'm surprised they don't have the Leprechaun Celebra Duck. Be into that.
I actually, honest to goodness, I have four little Irish leprechaun ducks.
Really?
In the bathtub at home. I do. Little green hats, little gold coins on them. This will be a nice addition.
What the hell?
What have you done over there?
Good question.
Breaking stuff.
It's all that racket.
So. That sounded Jesus. sounded like a duck, I guess. All right.
It's a game of hide and seek.
He said game of hide and seek.
Yeah, he did. I got something
a
better.
A little game of switcheroo.
Together we will play a game of switcheroo. They should have a Bushwick Bill rubber duck.
Actual size.
One eye shot out.
I ain't the type to get all mushy. Yeah,
right. Okay.
All right, I'm doing it.
Do it. You ready?
Yeah, man.
This one comes off.
Hotter than hell.
It's called
She.
Wow.
This.
Wait a minute.
This is a song.
Hang on.
What?
One more time.
This one comes off.
Dressed to Kill.
It's called
She.
Whoops. Whoopsie doodle.
What did happened? I say? I say hotter than hell the first
yeah.
time?
Oh,
sorry.
You did. I wasn't
I,
even
you know
attention.
What? Okay.
Caught
you. Pardon me.
The random generator doesn't actually give the album.
No,
no.
It just
no.
comes from Nick's mind.
Yeah, and yeah.
Plus, there's not
I go
a,
off the fly.
Generally,
here.
There's not a lot of room for too much text on there. Just have the song title.
I would have said Alive, personally, but.
It's very much like the robot from Pee-wee's Playhouse that would spit out the, what was it, like a joke of the day or something?
Yeah, yeah.
Or the word of the day, right? And then if you say it, everyone screams.
Speaking of Alive, this is only the second song short of the first episode, Strutter, that has a song that was on Alive, right?
I think you're right.
I think you might
be. That's huge. We should
that
be. Is huge. We should actually be more excited here.
I am excited. I said the wrong album, but got the song right, so that's all that counts.
That's what counts.
So yeah, I think
same year, right?
See, now we're starting to
no almost.
You know, we're starting to get into the. Into the good stuff of the catalog.
Could be a crackhead.
All right. Enough of that. Just close that browser.
Now, that was probably Leprechaun in the Hood, right? That's one of them, too.
This is from a news story where they went to Mobile, Alabama. Reports that people saw a leprechaun. And these were the people talking to the news. Go ahead. She.
It's exciting. It's exciting. This one is a monster of a track off the Alive album, complete with Mr. Fraley's guitar solo, which we will not be, unfortunately, getting into here.
Yeah, we do the studio cuts on this show if you're new to the program. And, yeah, like I said, we're starting to get into the real quality songs of the catalog. The Boomerangs, the Thieves in the Night are in the archives, and we're looking to move forward. And this is a, yeah, this is a, I'm not going to get ahead of myself, but this might be a candidate for two rounds of voting. I'd be surprised if it wasn't.
Pretty impressive.
We must dive into it, because we've had our preconceptions about songs in the past, and the tides have been turned a few times. So,
you all right over there, Andy?
Andy's checking out the numbers.
I'm reading the numbers for our last episode.
Can I real quick?
I'm not, they were 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Can I real quick get into a quick video that I saw last week that I wanted to comment on?
Okay.
Put up by somebody who's very close with our guy Chris over here,
mm-hmm.
of him playing a show from recently.
Oh, wow.
And him just absolutely abusing and violating his guitar, just
Ooh.
Smacking it and on the fretboard. You?
Who, me?
Yeah, I saw a video. You were just...
You're slapping
you were,
your
you
guitar?
You were violating that thing. There was some right-handed tapping that was just brutal.
Nah, it was more like Morello style.
I thought you were anti-right-handed tapping.
Oh, he was... that guitar's going to have to go to therapy.
What can
times.
I say? I went there.
Wow.
It was a nice video. I wish Andy had seen it.
Yeah, I'll have to watch it after. Sounds cool.
I enjoyed it thoroughly.
It was from your show in Michigan last
yes,
weekend.
Yes, it was.
Very cool.
Hamtramck Music Festival.
What is Hamtramck? Is that a town? Or
it's
is a
city within the city of Detroit.
Oh, is it one where they made another city to change the...
No, that was East Point.
Okay.
Used to be part of Detroit, and they literally seceded from the city.
Some sort of economic...
And changed their name to resemble the name of the more affluent suburbs along Lake St. Clair.
Different points and whatnot.
Yes.
Cool.
Interesting.
Learn something every episode.
There you go.
You're never too old to learn something.
And I never knew that either. I didn't know that type of thing happened.
Detroit's a financial nightmare, huh?
It's a it's an interesting town.
Social nightmare.
Put it that way.
Social nightmare.
Speaking of guitar abuse, there's, like as Nick said, there's plenty of it on the live version and a fair amount of it on the studio version. And abuse, of course, we mean that in a good way, like kicking butt on the guitar. So,
you guys ready to listen to some butt kicking?
I'm
Absolutely.
Ready.
Let's do it.
If I can add one more comment that I had premeditated, I wanted to talk about that video, is any groupie seeing that kind of manhandling of the guitar would immediately think twice, no matter how sleazy the groupie may be.
She wouldn't want to be abused
about getting with the guitar player after seeing that brutalization. It was just the
You don't think that would draw someone in?
I don't know.
It goes above and beyond.
She might not know what she's in store for with that kind of passion that was going on.
I don't know. I mean, you got to assume Morello got some pussy out there.
I don't
during
know.
During his time in
yeah,
Rage.
I'm sure. Anyone in a band that's successful doesn't matter.
And you had a lot of pedals going, too. How many did you have? Like 8?
Let's see. Yeah, like 7 going. That's my usual assortment.
Do you get a chorus pedal out there?
I do. I wasn't on that particular song, but I do have it on my board.
Do you have a tube screamer?
No, I do not. I do have an overdrive pedal. I have a Bad Monkey. Digitech Bad Monkey.
Is it about the same thing?
Essentially, yeah.
How do you feel about the tube screamers? When I was younger and full of hope in my guitar career, I thought, I need a tube screamer. Don't know why.
It's a cool name.
Someone told me Zach Wilde used it, and I thought, oh, you can get an insane tone out of it, maybe.
Generally, the Stevie Ray Vaughan was known for using one. Generally, they're I think they sound better on Fender amps because they don't add any low frequencies. And Fender amps are generally robust in the low frequencies and lacking in the mid-range. And the Tube Screamer makes up for that.
Mm.
Other amps, it can sound kind of thin. That's my opinion.
Well, there you have it. More
Why
learning.
Why are we talking about this?
I don't know. People like to learn.
People like to learn.
People love learning. Just, that's just why they tune in.
The two coming to this show to learn, you're in big trouble.
Right.
Let, speaking of some legendary guitar tone, let's
yeah,
let's
this,
check it out.
We're guitar fans, guitar nerds, Kiss fans, fans of rock and roll music are in for a treat. This is a gem.
Lend us your ears.
Nick's stopping it
just
before
wanted to comment
in.
Since we were talking about guitar, we got a little slight delay going on there on the opening guitar riff.
Oh, really?
Yeah, a little bit. You can hear, you know, little. basically, just I can't think of another way to describe it except for delay.
Oh.
And this song, if I'm not mistaken, doesn't Gene say something about like a caveman kind of a feel to it or something like that?
We'll have to go back.
And
to
it's
that.
it's got that with the drumming, just nailing the toms every
caveman drumming
there, yeah, stuff like that.
Hmm.
The riff,
yeah, the whole thing is pretty primal, which is a good thing. Very 70s sounding. Would you say, I mean, I think you would say, but would you agree, I guess, this is one of their heavier tracks of the sort of pre, like, I mean, it's a different kind of heavy than it's on Revenge, obviously.
Right.
Of their 70s output, this has got to be at or near the top of the list of the and the heaviness quotient.
I would agree, definitely. I would say it's got Sabbath-esque qualities, if any of their material does.
Strange Ways.
Yeah, that's another one. That
kind of similar.
That is very heavy.
Dinosaur heavy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, another, speaking of that, I would make a closer comparison to Blue Oyster Cult with this tune, this riff.
Godzilla? No, that's not them.
Yeah, that's...
is it? Okay.
But, and that's a band that, for whatever reason, I just could never get into. But it's kind of that sort of, just that 70s heaviness. I don't think it's as dark as a Sabbath tune, but it's definitely is about as heavy as Kiss was going to get in the 70s.
It's almost sort of, I know it's not going to be extremely compatible with these comparisons, but it's almost got the sort of same heaviness as a Deep Purple or Captain Beyond, sort of, or maybe not. It's more direct with just kind of playing an octave, and you know, it's a lot more basic musically than stuff that those bands would do. But it's got similar heaviness, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, I guess you know would fall under the heading of 70s heavy. I don't know if I'd equate it to the bands you just mentioned, but you know, it's that 70s rock sound that a lot of people kind of dismiss Kiss for not being musically proficient or heavy enough. This song blows both those criticisms out of the water. So let's delve into it further. Okay, now that the whole band is kicking in and you got kind of Peter's kind of swinging drum sound and more riffing going on, I will retract my earlier statement. The Deep Purple, Captain Beyond type stuff is kind of coming to light for me here. So,
and you can hear the Peter's doing those rolls on the snare. You can hear that very clearly on this version,
yeah,
not
cool.
So much on the live one, unfortunately.
See, that's what's known. That's what a lot of people, attribute that, or not attribute it, but they describe it as like that swing type of drumming. Because, you know, a lot of the 60s drummers, like post-Ringo and post-Dave Clark, if you will.
Right,
Mom's
right.
Mom's favorite.
Ginger Baker in this group?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
These are the guys who, like, worshipped at the altar of Buddy Rich, Gene Krupa, all the real, like technically just virtuoso jazz drummers. These guys who do these crazy solos and have the double kick kits and stuff. If you ever watch some old videos of them on YouTube, these guys are freaking amazing.
Yeah.
There's some Buddy
Rich. They
used
to be an attraction back then.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, that's a headlining show.
Drummer. Front.
Yeah, like, well, Gene Krupa and Buddy Rich, they had the band where they had the big band where each guy was sitting in his little area, and they had the stands. And you know how they would have the band leader's initials on the stands?
Uh-huh.
They would have, you know, Gene Krupa's or Buddy Rich's.
Yeah, they were band.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And, you know, you mentioned Deep Purple, Ian Paice, definitely of that ilk, Ginger Baker, Mitch Mitchell. Drummers that had, you know, that kind of swing style to it. And you can hear it in Peter's drumming here.
Bill Ward.
Bill Ward, absolutely. Good one. John Bonham had it too, but he was way more powerful, and people ended up, the drummers that came in the wake of John Bonham kind of zeroed in on the power of it and sort of abandoned the swing of it. But he had it too, if you listen closely, especially in the earlier stuff.
That guy's so overrated.
With how eclectic Zeppelin could be, yeah, he had to have been able to do that.
Right.
He had to have been able to pull it off. So,
were you serious?
I'm just trying to start trouble. I just want to get people mad.
We might need the music here. People were clamoring for it the other week.
It's tough to, well, when you're on that level, you can't really underrate him. So, but at any rate, drummers back in that day had a swing to their style. If you listen back to the jazz drummers that they came up on, you can hear it. And again, the guys who sort of followed in the wake of John Bonham pretty much zeroed in on the power of it.
Yeah, there's a lot more happening between the twos and the fours back then.
Absolutely. It was a lot of, you know, a little busy drumming, but still on point with the beat. And, you know, it's kind of like how Eddie Van Halen, he had a lot of swing in his rhythm playing and stuff, but the guitar players who followed him, they zeroed in on the two-handed tapping and the histrionics of it, and they just did not cop the feel of it, really. And this is like feel drumming, swing-style drumming. And it's why when, you know, guys like our friend Bob McLean bust on Peter for being a lousy drummer, I disagree, especially on the studio stuff, you know, like
and particularly early on.
Yeah, like Nick said, it's like with the live stuff, you know, the adrenaline takes over and you just start bashing on it. But
you know, I think if you look at the, like, if you buy Kissology 3 or whatever, is that the one that would have, yeah, it'd be Kissology 3
reunion,
like the Tiger Stadium, like when starting with that era. If you look at that, I could see you being like, eh, Peter, Chris, whatever. I've seen way better. But if you actually go back and listen to this original stuff.
Or if you watch him in the, I mean,
like
once again, we're going to bring up Winterland.
Yeah, right.
I mean, watch him in that.
He leaves something to be desired in the later stuff. But, you know,
I mean, you're not,
he's also 48 or something and didn't play drums for 10 years.
Early
something.
On, he wasn't doing like Terry Bozzio type drum solos where he's playing a million notes a second. But still, I mean, what I always, with drumming, I've heard people say that, like, Neil Peart, like, they say his drum solos are incredible. And in my opinion, his drum solos, like, I don't really care to watch them, but the stuff he does during the songs is great.
It's better
than the
solo.
And that's, like, way more important, if you ask me.
I've never cared for drum solos either, period. I don't care who's doing it. I mean, you know, they're probably in the set to give the other guys a break. Same with the guitar solo or whatever. But, you know, I don't need to see a drum solo. You know,
I'd prefer not to see any standalone solos. I like a solo contained in a song, but just
Yeah, I'm
like
with you, too.
The spotlight solo has never been my favorite part
of
the show.
Even within a song, it can get a little crazy.
Except for Palace at Auburn Hills, Eric Carr with the lasers and those electronic pads when he gets that going.
Now, if you would have played a quick roll in Rio de Janeiro 83, just played a quick tom roll, had the cannon go off, there you go, done.
That's all you need?
That's all you need.
All right. Well, that's your opinion. I like the lasers coming out of the Statue of Liberty Sphinx eyes or whatever it was. I forgot. And then him with the electronic pads. All right. Let's dive back in.
Nasty.
You like that?
Just dirty, filthy guitar playing.
Yeah, that lead line Ace plays there is one of the best he's ever done.
Really?
It's just that little bit, you know, with those sort of consecutive bends going on. It's like Nick said, it's just nasty. It's great. One of his best series of notes that he ever rattled off in his career. No question.
I enjoy the fact that they had a different, completely different riff going on just for that portion of the solo. Or where that portion or where just, the solo
yeah,
was.
Yeah, it changes
the little lead.
Yeah, usually you would just keep it going and
that's
then add a solo.
Well, obviously it came later, but that's a Randy Rhodes staple.
To change the riff.
If you notice, when he's going into the solo, a lot of times it's an entirely different rhythmic, you know, thing going on.
Okay.
Or different guitar riff, different, you know, the bass, everything.
That's good.
Not just continuing the verse or the chorus or whatever.
Not the 80s Kiss formula that we've criticized several times for the
definitely
mailing
not,
it in songs.
It's definitely not a lazy technique.
Boomerang? Is that what you're saying?
It's not the boomerang.
That was good.
That was good stuff. She walks by moonlight. There's a lot of power to two guitars and a bass playing the exact same riff.
You do like that, huh?
It's underrated because it's simple. And a lot of times, you know, people are like, all right, well, we got to. And it's nice when the different instruments are doing different things and it comes together. But there's something really powerful about it when just all three of them are playing this heavy riff.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying it thoroughly.
Good.
Yeah, the tones blend together. I mean, they're obviously the bass tone is its own thing, but the two guitar tones are a little slightly different, but meshing together well sort of fills out all the frequencies and just adds to the heaviness of it. But yeah, this is not a song where you want someone to be adding some texture with one of the guitars. This is a bludgeoning riff, and everybody needs to be hammering away at it.
Are you saying you don't want a lead flute portion over this, which we might possibly get into after the song?
Oh, wait.
What?
You guys can discuss that for a second.
We'll be maybe touching upon an alternate version. Either that or we'll just be mentioning it afterwards based on how much time we have left.
No, the answer would be no. I'm not in the mood for any Jethro Tull-isms in this. Kiss is...
So you're saying that they aesthetically made the right decisions.
They're making all the right moves in this tune so far.
Yeah, I mean, if you listen to the original and then listen to this version, it makes perfect sense that they stripped it down and made it... We want to be black. What did he say? I want to go with black.
Dark.
Heavy metal.
Heavy metal Beatles.
Heavy metal Beatles, even though heavy metal didn't exist yet.
Which is a good description, actually.
It is. I just like to tease him, Gene Simmons.
And he's looking frantically for leprechaun.
No, we're cool. Don't worry about it.
Oh,
Yeah.
Just nothing bad is happening.
Well, that alternate sort of riff or beat that they kind of went into with the, what would you call that, a bridge or a second verse or whatever?
I think that's as close as we get to a chorus in this song.
Yeah, really. That's a good point.
It's almost a ska rhythm.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Like
Different, seemed like a different time signature. A lot of swagger in it. Everything you want from a heavy 70s rock tune is within this. So, great. Really good.
I am caressing my demon duck here.
God.
And
celebrity duck.
I'm like patting him on the head because I'm glad that this is the song we got out of it.
Yeah. Doing well for
wait a minute.
What things just happened here? Something popped up here.
She's taking off her clothes.
Doing well for others. She doesn't really know.
Popped up.
Power's all within her, and she takes off her clothes.
I don't know any of the lyrics to this song.
I am baffled by what's happening.
I was
going
to say, is there any insight on the lyrics in the book there? Andy?
No.
What do you mean, no? The book is closed. You're not even
I looked.
At it.
I do my homework.
There's no insight on the content of this tune?
I don't know. Lyrically, this might be like Going Blind, where Gene just thought, okay, that's a good sounding line.
And
I
read.
A little stream of consciousness lyrics. Maybe. Nothing wrong with that.
Stephen Cornell and I wrote that around the time when he and I were just sitting around writing songs. He had the riff. I remember writing See You Tonight right around there, and I'm going, gee, it's too bad we can't be in a band and play this. He kept saying, that's my favorite song. Let's play that song. What does that tell you?
See You Tonight?
I don't know. Then there's some Steve Cornell paragraph, but it's not really... he says it's...
Who's he again?
He's that one who like had child porn on his computer or whatever.
Great.
Didn't he?
Yeah, unfortunately. There's a story out there recently.
He's the one that was
in Wicked Lester. He allegedly blew it during the audition. The record company said, we'll sign you, but you got to get rid of that guy. And he co-wrote some of the early classics.
Yeah.
That's about all I know of that guy.
It's real dinosaur rock. It's fun. It has a lot of power to it. I like the way it starts out. Beep, 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 beep. Nothing really worth mentioning.
Wow, nothing about the lyrics.
No, it just says, she walks by moonlight, like in quotes. I don't know. There's nothing. He doesn't give any insight there.
Probably
he's just like singing along.
He probably just wrote down a bunch of different lines and, okay, I like this one, I like this one.
Do you think she's a witch or some kind of just sort of some regular...
She's just some woman who's going to bring him to his knees.
She's mysterious.
Yeah.
And that's about all. She's getting some Eye of Newt.
Yeah. Eye of Newt.
As long as he keeps his shirt on, everything's probably copacetic.
Was that the rule back then, though? He's probably pretty lean. 73,
there was a lot of, there was a lot of chest hair, but actually, he's still showing the chest these days. He showed about the same amount of skin all through his career.
Shows those parts of his under the side ass thigh area.
Well, you know what always horrified me was, I'm looking at it right now on Andy's wall over here, the Peter grabbing a hold of, or Paul grabbing a hold of Peter's backside, and he's got those holes cut on the side.
Yeah, his ass.
Those always terrified me when I was little, seeing pictures of Peter like that.
Dude, I never noticed that until like 2 weeks ago looking at
that he's just supremely goosing him.
Yeah, hotter than hell. Just did not notice.
Grabbing them cakes, if you will.
Did not ever pick up on that. It's very weird. That's when Paul was wasted, right? Isn't that the story? Hotter than hell photo shoot.
Yeah, that was when they had to lock him in the car so that the other party participants didn't
still
violate
an iconic
him.
Photo.
Crack him in the butt. Wasn't that the thing?
Some of those guys
that go both ways who are involved in the photo session.
They had to protect Paul.
I mean, if I was going to crack a dude in the butt, Paul would be my first target.
Paul could have easily been mounted at that point.
Second would be Ted DiBiase.
Junior. Yeah. Thank you very much. Senior's a little too hairy for my taste.
Yeah.
He's a bear, if you will.
Ted DiBiase Sr. looked like a 80s porn star. the hairdo, like that little curly tight, like well, a little mini curly mullet.
Who were the two the wrestlers that had the? They were almost like Chippendales. They had like
the American Males.
No, it wasn't. It was American Males. I'll have to think about it. But there's a guy who looked a lot like DiBiase back then as well. Had the same kind of beard.
Tag team.
Hmm. I can't think of who they were. It wasn't one of the Expresses, Midnight.
Rock and Roller, Midnight.
It might have been. I don't know.
Those are hard to keep track
those
of.
Those are difficult.
Who are the two guys I like?
The Bushwhackers? Yeah. Luke and Bush?
Dude, the next town over in a comic book store, Luke the Bushwhacker was there and had an appearance last night.
What?
A friend of mine put a picture on his Facebook. He's like, yeah, just hanging out in Griffith with Luke the Bushwhacker.
Oh, man.
I was like, what?
I'd have gone over there. I love those guys.
Could have licked his head.
Maybe he's
those
still
guys
around.
Are marching around the ring. Their arm movements. Those guys are great.
Yeah, they were great.
That's so funny you bring them up. Yeah. He might still be in the area somewhere.
Yeah, he probably is.
All the way from New Zealand.
That's right.
That's where they were from?
Yeah.
Weren't they the sheep herders?
They were the sheep herders.
These guys were
consummate entertainers. Gotta love it.
Maybe he's appearing somewhere else in the area tonight.
It's a weird thing.
Gotta look it up now.
I feel like the Bushwhackers were too recent for you. No?
Were
you a kid when they were wrestling?
I was like teens.
Teens? Yeah. Okay.
Well, those guys
I'm not saying their shtick.
No, I didn't even know they must have had a couple runs because I remember them from when I was a kid. And I was thinking, you probably didn't watch wrestling anymore when you.
I dabbled in it right around that time period.
Oh, okay, so they were back.
Enjoyed it. Okay. Their shtick was good. Entertaining. I know she's going down the way. Everybody
knows she's so good. Great drumming right there.
Yeah, he's on fire.
Really good. I mean, again, this is a tune that, you know, people who bash Kiss, people who bash Peter Criss, any bashing that goes on of Kiss can be done away with by putting this song on. And it's one of those songs where if you listen to this and you still have an issue with the band, you're just being a prick about it. And you're letting your preconceptions override sort of objective opinion of the music. I mean, this is as good as any heavy 70s rock out there.
Right? Agreed.
No disagreement here. I was also going to add that I've always been a big fan of the... I'm guessing that's... I don't know who plays which part. Probably our buddy Dave would know. But when you were doing the... You know, what is that? Like the main chord there, the dun-dun. And then there's always the other side. Yeah, someone... Someone hitting the sort of higher notes of, I think it's the same chord. I don't think they really are changing the chord up during that. But I've always enjoyed that, the alternating, you know, the two guitars right. doing that. It's always been pretty cool. And that on the live version I find even cooler sounding.
Really? It's better on the live version?
I like it better on the live version.
Is
well,
it
I
less
mean,
subtle?
It sounds
Is
great.
It, like
it sounds great here, but. Yeah, I don't know. Just always favored that tactic in the live setting there. Thought it was really cool sounding, so.
Gotcha.
No complaints. I mean, come on. It's she. Come on.
This is what's missing from those songs I'm bringing up again, those 80s Kiss songs that we've criticized for having too much of a mail-it-in formula, or there's a change that you didn't expect. Like, if you listen to 30 seconds of the song for those songs I'm talking about, you pretty much know everything that's going to happen. But with this, you don't really see this coming. Something different, a nice breakdown that works well, that doesn't... I mean, it's not exactly the same as the rest of the song, It's exciting. It gives you a reason to listen to the whole song. Instead of like, yeah, I already got the gist of it, and it's just going to repeat over and over to exactly 3 minutes, 3.5 minutes, whatever.
Well, yeah, like breakdowns and sort of mixing up the tempo or stuff. That was pretty much relegated to live versions as rock music evolved into the 80s.
Yeah.
I mean, like something like this is, you know, you just, you get the impression that they're playing together as a unit in the studio and, you know, just kind of going for it. Whereas, in the 80s when recording techniques and studio layouts became more sophisticated and a lot of overdubbing and production work going on, you know, bands didn't really play together as a unit much in the studio. You definitely get that feel from this tune and a lot of the 70s rock. This one especially, though.
Mm-hmm. Nick, nothing?
I
thought you had something. Sorry.
I lost my train of thought.
Come back to you.
What? Okay, yeah, come back to me.
I'll come back to you.
It'll come back.
Got it yet?
Yes.
Okay.
Believe it or not. Wow. I was going to say that it's something that you hear a lot of, that a band's first few albums, or at least, a lot of people say the first album, but I'd say definitely in Kiss's case, they had material for the first few albums that you have your whole life to write them.
Yeah, so right.
They have sort of a kitchen sink a lot of the time. Sometimes they're underdeveloped, and the later albums seem to, you know, have more to the songs, but in this particular case, you could tell that, you know, these songs were worked on over time.
Right.
That they really were playing them a lot and listening. Okay, like, you know, should we do this? Should we do this? And they made a lot of really good decisions, and you could tell a lot of time was put into, you know, rehearsing these and arranging them. So.
Right. It wasn't like a, let's do this in this key at this tempo and see what happens. Let's experiment.
Yeah,
it was the tempo
pretty. I'd say rigidly structured.
Yeah, it's cool.
Which I'm a fan of.
No bullshit.
Now, I have to make a confession here that your brother Jay is going to be very disappointed in me about. Uh-oh. But that lead line that Ace played right there.
Yeah.
MacReady plays the exact same thing in Alive by Pearl Jam.
You know,
and apparently it was a direct nod to his Kiss fandom.
I've heard that before.
And I had never made that connection until, like, within the past month or two. I either read that somewhere online or it just finally clicked for me. But, his opening to the Alive solo toward the end of the song...
identical, right?
...is identical to that. So, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's cool. You know? I like that.
It's a good line. It sounds like he's got a little, you know, harmonized there. I don't know if he double-tracked it or whatever, or put some sort of
works
effect on it, but it's got a little, almost a synthy tone to it because of that. So,
well, and also on the same album we have Room Service, and the guitar solo has a very similar sound to
right.
it. So some sort of technique was being used.
It's something they liked and used repeatedly.
Now, when he was doing that little section there where it was the same part that Chris was referring to earlier, but there was actual harmonization going on there.
Okay, yeah.
That reminded me of the Acrobat, or Love Theme from Kiss, if you will, where the main riff there, they're playing it sort of straight, and then it starts to kind of fall into a variation with the harmony there. Just reminded me of it. Seemed to be something they enjoyed. That Thin Lizzy apparently came and stole from them.
Right. They're thieves.
Thieves.
They stole everything. Them. They stole Detroit Rock City right out from under Kiss. Hey, if it was 2015 when they wrote that.
We were talking about that discussion we had a while back.
The boys are back in town.
Yeah, where Gene was claiming. Said that they, or not really claiming, but implying at least that Thin Lizzy may have blatantly that they stole been stealing stuff from.
I'll do it here. From Kiss. And then what's the boys are back?
Yeah, no.
So that's
what is that, the Marvin Gaye family approach?
That's what I was going to say. Man, a lot of the times where you hear like a song was stolen from another song, and you know, it's like, oh shit, that is identical. That one, it's like there's a similar beat. It's not the same song.
I never thought so.
Yeah, it's like I thought it was lyrics and melody that are like the two things that can be like copywritten or whatever. It's like you can't publish or copyright a beat
with a cowbell in it, like a little dance beat. I mean, it is very similar, but man, it's not the same song.
No.
Or in the in the Marvin Gaye lawsuit thing, it's kind of like if you capture the vibe exactly.
Right, yeah.
Like if it's got the vibe or the feel, then apparently you're ripping it off.
Yeah, that's a slippery slope, man. There's a lot of lawsuits pending if that holds up an appeal.
Is that going to an appeal?
Oh, hopefully? Of course. Yeah.
Man, what was it like? They had to give $7 million to the estate of Marvin Gaye?
Something like that.
That's a mess. That's
and I heard now they're going after Pharrell for Happy, saying it's sounds like What's Going On, which I hear none of that.
Is that real?
Yeah.
That's not another one of your left turn signal jokes?
No, I heard that.
Really? Yeah. I don't hear anything. That.
Yeah, who knows? It's ridiculous.
Wow, you know?
That's probably why whatever that guy who got who settled out of court with Tom Petty about that "Stay with Me" song.
Yeah,
it's probably why he did it, because he had a feeling he'd get dinged even worse if it went to
court. Yeah.
Well, Tom Petty kind of always takes the high road within that. I've heard of a couple of songs where people have actually asked Tom Petty, like, "What do you think? Like, that sounds a lot like one of your songs." He's like, "Eh,
really?
It kind of sounds like it." But
I think if he wanted to take the high road, he wouldn't have been taking any money.
Well, I think that's just his public.
From what I've heard, it was his management.
That's what he wants you to think.
He personally wasn't behind it. I kind of believe him, but who knows? I mean, you know, wasn't it just recent?
His management told him to suck his own dick. Would he do that too?
If he could,
that's up to
probably
him.
It was probably driven by that sack of shit Jeff Lynne, who's associated with that whole song and that whole era of Tom Petty's career.
He's a sack of shit.
He is a sack of shit.
I don't know who it is.
That guy from ELO.
Sack of shit.
What instrument does he play? I don't even know.
Probably the synthesizer.
He plunks around on a guitar and has a stupid white afro.
Is that the guy kind of looks like Brian May a little bit?
Sounds like it.
Looks a little bit. No.
It might be.
He rides on people's coattails and by association, people think he's some sort of significant figure in rock. He's a sack of shit. Say it again. I really hate ELO, too, because I tell you, back in my album buying days as a kid, for some unknown reason, I bought Out of the Blue by ELO on 8-track.
Okay.
And it was a double album, so it was $10-$11.
Right.
Absolute horseshit. I smashed it with my boot in the driveway like 20 minutes after listening to
That's
it.
That's funny.
It was
awful,
and I've hated him ever since. He's a sack of
what
shit.
What was like the... What's like the hit from that one that we might know?
I don't know. I don't even know what's on that album.
I only know like one or two songs.
They have all their, you know, fucking Telephone Line and you know, that Don't Bring Me Down song. And it's crap.
Did they do Evil Woman?
Yes, yeah.
Not another one of my favorites.
No, they suck.
Yeah. To bring up our...
It's like I quit them and like Supertramp. It's like,
oh, you hate Supertramp.
How did these bands ever get popular?
I remember you throwing a huge tantrum at the cafe about Supertramp once.
Oh, I hate them.
What is
like
their,
you wouldn't
now,
allow
what's
that.
What's their major hit?
You
Bloody Well Right and Dreamer or whatever. That awful high-pitched
that Take
vocal.
A Look at My Girlfriend song?
Yeah.
No.
You'd
good.
Know it
you're,
if you heard
look,
it. That
look,
one.
Consider yourself fortunate that these songs aren't on your radar.
They're
terrible.
Not, apparently.
I remember there was
I've
a rule.
Heard of the band, but no.
That was not allowed to be played on the speakers in the cafe.
As much good song, good music came out in the 70s, ELO and Supertramp are at the bottom of the barrel. Terrible. File them along with Emerson, Lake, and Palmer and Paul's shit list.
You listen to Emerson, Lake, and Palmer.
You listen to ELO, not me.
And yes, if you're asking me.
Yeah.
The band, yes?
Yeah.
I think early on they had a kind of a raw quality to them. I'm talking about Yes here, but...
Did they?
Their early albums are very early albums, like Fragile and stuff. It's definitely proggy, but it's not as like... I don't know what they were completely neutered by the time they really hit it big.
Sort of some of the Steely Dan stuff as well was a little bit neutered sounding, a little bit too perfect.
Steely Dan was like, there's no edge to it, you know. Shit, I mean, great sounding stuff. The production values were excellent, but you know, you're not going to get laid to that music. You're not going to want to lay somebody listening to that music. There's just no edge to it. Plenty of edge in this tune, no question.
Yeah. Real quick, another story very similar to what you said. One time I was with our brother Jay, and he bought a Toad the Wet Sprocket CD in the 90s at some point, you know, back whenever it was newish. And we were driving back home from Best Buy, and he's like, man, this is terrible. So we kept driving past our house, and we went to the CD Tape Escape, and he sold it for $3 used back to the used CD store. On the same ride, because you couldn't sample it first.
In that era, and like Chris is talking about buying the record, there's a certain, like, if you get a good record, it's a much more gratifying experience back then. But if you get a terrible album, you're just stuck. Now you can go on Amazon, you know, check it out.
Listen to samples.
And if you get a great album, it's still great. But back then, if you got it, and there were a lot of surprises that you didn't get the preview,
it
made it even more special.
There are also albums that you don't really like the first time you listen to them, but they grow on you.
Right.
That wasn't going to happen with ELO.
And when you drop money on it, you're kind of like forcing yourself to.
And in terms of the sampling, you could sample it because this shit would actually get played on the radio.
Right.
Why I bought an ELO album after what was being played on the radio, I have no clue. But at least I knew better not to buy any fucking Supertramp. I mean, when I would hear that whiny, high-pitched vocalist and that just completely ball-less music on the radio, I'd be like, how is this shit popular? How did Breakfast in America sell multiple millions of copies in this country? Just
are they
no
American?
Balls.
Are they Canadian?
No, I don't think they're. I think they're
something else.
British or something. Who cares? It's kind of like. I mean, I'm gonna ruffle some feathers here, but it's like the same thing with like Pink Floyd. That band does not rock. There's nothing
never.
Rock about Pink Floyd.
Agreed.
It's not heavy. It's not aggressive, and there's no edge to it. I need those three things in my rock music.
100%.
If any of it's missing, it doesn't rock.
100% agree with you.
You will not ruffle me or my demon duck's feathers with that statement. I've long since, Andy's probably heard me talk about it many times.
Mm-hmm.
Pink Floyd has never done anything for me.
I hate
that Chicago rock radio plays it so much.
It's another, add that band to the... list of bands. I just don't get how they became so popular. I mean, I can understand how they were popular. Okay.
Yeah.
They have a
but
sound that's
so
unique.
Popular. Like that they're everywhere. Like, you know, everywhere across
the country.
Stadium
band. That's not a.
Oh yeah, man. That's
a thousand seater. That's a huge
major.
Yeah. Well, and I can understand the appeal of the live show, but the music itself, it just I'll say it again. It does not rock. It's not rock music.
I need the
qualities I just rattled off for my rock music. If it doesn't have it, I'm not really interested.
Isn't this a discussion? Maybe Gene Simmons said this at some point about the difference between rock and roll and quote unquote rock, like where those types of bands were what people called rock.
We're talking
it's like more
sort of like early 2000s. What was popular? Or are we talking further back?
No, like
I think further back.
Further back.
Because early 2000s, like, that it was an infestation of rock without the roll.
Right. But I mean, this was like an older quote, I think, about that period where, like, you know, the more.
Well, the rock without the.
Like all the bands Chris is naming basically would be the rock without the roll.
The roll started to disappear from rock music in the 80s with all the bands that completely missed the point about Van Halen. Completely missed the swing, the swagger, that the whole feel of rock music, rock and roll music. The bands, the hair bands that came in the wake of Van Halen, for the most part, not all of them, but the ones that just completely ignored the feel in favor of the image mm-hmm. and the flash totally stripped the roll out of rock music, and it was gone forever.
They focused on the tapping and the screeching vocals. And
the spandex pants yeah. and, you know, the makeup and the glam and stuff, and it's just...
And some of that stuff is all right. I actually like probably a song or two by all the popular bands, but that's about it. Like, none of those bands that were really famous then put out great albums.
No,
not too many. And that reminds me of another.
Maybe the Crew, early Crew might be the exception, but
right,
or some Dokken stuff.
Yeah, good album.
Yeah, they wrote some great songs.
Yeah, but there's not a lot of feel in Dokken music. It's not no feel in
Nick.
Poison music. I'm talking this kind of feel.
I would say Poison definitely not, but I would argue Dokken has some feel.
Now the feel,
I would argue that
right away. No.
They're not my favorite band, but I would argue that yeah, there is. I mean, my favorite song by them is probably "Burning Like a Flame."
Well, it's certainly not. There's certainly no feel coming from the drums or the rhythm section. I mean, it's all coming from Lynch
from guitar,
which I'll give you. That guy was a great rhythm player. His rhythm playing is underrated. But
I'm just laughing because this might be like the third episode in a row where Nick's mentioned "Burning Like a Flame."
That's what I did.
It just keeps coming up. I hope it continues.
It's sort of a thing I'm working on.
Is that
like
on
it.
"Back for the Attack"?
Yeah, the Dream Warriors album.
Anyway, like I said, it started to disappear in the 80s, and yeah, I mean, it's like we talked about earlier, that those little snare rolls you heard in between the main beats, you haven't heard that in decades in rock music. It's because, you know, it's not recorded well, and drummers are just more into that bludgeoning style, really, so... You're certainly not going to hear it in the active rock genre. Nickelback is not going to hit you with any swing.
Ugh.
What the hell are you doing?
The ELO of the present day.
And it just reminded me of another band I heard Chris go on a tirade about. I was over at Chris's place watching Metal Mania one time, and a Crocus video came on.
Oh, they were terrible.
And it was an ugly scene for a few minutes.
I don't know
there.
Crocus. I'm trying to think if I've ever heard any of their stuff. Do they have a singer that has like a really silly voice, like a Muppet voice?
Yeah, Mark Torian or
I
some
don't know.
Shit.
I think I might remember a little bit, but not much.
Yeah, I was not a fan of them. They're terrible.
Doing well for others.
Weird part of the song.
It's a part that you don't hear if they do it live, really. They don't usually do that because they go into the part that's at the end of Let Me Know off the first album.
Right.
Made famous by Andy and me in our band. Yeah,
of course.
It's kind of interesting how they switched it up, because it's like that whole fade out thing that they just had there in the studio version. Seems like that was probably groomed as like their live breakdown, but then somewhere along the way they decided to throw in the Let Me Know riff, which of course works great.
Yeah.
You know, anybody, that's one of the cornerstones of that live album.
Right.
But yeah, what a great cut. I mean, just 70s, everything that's great about 70s rock is in that tune. And I'm going to come right out and say it. The MVP of that tune, Peter Criss.
Agreed.
Brilliant drumming throughout. And just lays the foundation for everybody else to pile on and just get heavy.
Won't disagree that Peter sounding great on it. I don't know. I almost want to give it to Gene on this one.
Gene, huh?
Because it's got so many Gene-isms with the high, like on the low E string, where you go up, you're going up high on the fretboard, and you're sliding there. It's got so many Gene-isms, and it works so well.
And then, of course, you know,
you like that.
I did. Well,
and then of course, you know, Ace Frehley.
Well, yeah.
How many just quintessential Ace phrases does he peel off one
Dick.
After another in that song? I mean, of anybody, Paul is the guy who's the most understated. I mean,
I love Shane Beaver.
Well, he's probably helping himself to some in the back while they were recording this, but
unbelievable,
doubling up the rhythms and just playing straight rhythm guitar. But you don't even, his backing vocals aren't even prominent. And
no,
you know, Paul is actually a bit player on this one, which is generally not a recipe for success of a Kiss song, but it works here.
Well, in the early days and a few other albums, they could get away with Gene carrying the torch and knocking out a classic.
Which he certainly did here. So
how about some voting?
Yeah.
I think Chris goes first because he already basically... I mean, you just say it. Well, give me a second so I don't blow our ears off, because I really never adjusted the volume on this clip.
Resounding hallelujah, obviously.
Oh. There it is.
Hey, hit it again for me.
That's
now
it?
Andy. He's going
I want me go.
Well, I think this record did go gold.
You don't really, I mean, we've explained it during the song for this one. We don't really have to re-explain ourselves.
No.
We said everything we liked about it.
And the song speaks for itself. I mean, you know, what can we say about it that people...
That hasn't already been said.
And that people can't ascertain for themselves by listening to
it.
A line
from the worst Christmas song ever, Christmas in San Francisco by Vic Damone. Terrible song.
Yeah.
Terrible, terrible song.
Never heard it, but now I want to.
It's just dreadful.
The super tramp of Christmas songs.
It's worse.
So there was
and
really...
What could
there was
you say about the Golden Gate Bridge that hasn't been said before?
That's pretty much it. It's terrible. Terrible. Okay.
So there was really no tension or mystery about that first round of voting.
No,
but we
knew
going
that.
Into the second one, it's always a bit of mystery.
Well, let's start here.
Anticipation.
All right, Hammond!
For those of you playing the Pot of Thunder home game for the first time,
yeah,
this is where we decide once and for all if this is a stone cold Kiss classic.
So in other words,
we're cementing it one way or the other.
Is this song on the level of Move On, is basically where we're getting at.
Is it better than Shout It Out Loud?
Right. That did not make the cut. I don't know why. I don't remember what the controversy
didn't
was
make
there.
It out of the first round.
I don't remember who voted it down, but something happened that day.
But no, this is the lightning round where we do rapid fire voting. Starts with me, goes to Nick, ends up with Andy.
Okay.
And it goes... If it gets a good, real good, in honor of Roger.
I say that at work all the time now. Again, all these phrases were gone for
actually,
like.
Actually, Andy was the first one to perform that line.
You know, that is true. But a lot
was
of these.
Was it Roger's dad inspired by
the voice?
No, it was just the voice, yeah. And then we would make up phrases that he would say.
But it
so
was
that's
oh
all it
okay.
Was.
Yeah. All right.
It was Andy was the first one to be on camera uttering the phrase.
All right, well, let's get into it. You ready?
Let me get the clip. Okay.
Good.
Good.
Real good.
That's just the fucking way it is.
Right? Yeah, isn't that the winner?
That's a slam, dog.
Yeah, unquestionable.
I mean, come on.
Nobody.
Especially when you factor in the live version. Yeah. I mean, that live version might be like what really took the whole concept of the 70s live album up to another echelon. I mean, that's the whole sort of live experience wrapped up into one thing.
Right, right. And, you know, I think because you said Peter Criss is the MVP of the song, we should pay tribute to him quickly here.
And we do have a mailing list, so if you put your name on, we'll send you a postcard with our fucking faces on it. You could come down to us. Especially you, you horny bitches who want to do yourselves in with it. You know.
Up down there, ladies.
Once again,
that's an all-time.
Once again,
classic.
Paul Stanley being the understated contributor here in that clip.
You're right.
So, do we have a moment to bring up the drastically different vibe that can be felt in the Wicked Lester version?
Yeah, we can go quick.
Can we bring that up just real quick?
Yeah, I've never heard this.
It's very interesting. First time I heard it, I was it's just one of those things. Very interesting.
Although I gotta say, as long as we're talking about sort of 70s bands we don't really dig, can't really call myself a fan of Jethro Tull. Just can't. The flute in rock music, it just I don't get it.
Does the fact that on Rock and Roll Circus you've got Iommi on there with Jethro Tull, does that is that watchable for you due to the Iommi
definitely
factor?
Watchable, but
still not doing it for you.
Again, I just think when they got all like kind of folky in the 70s with like Songs from the Wood and all that other crap, it just lost it.
Oh, Aqualung is a nice heavy track. I will say that.
That song gets pretty boring about 30 seconds in, though. That song.
But
is there even any flute on that? I can't. Even
I don't
remember.
Even know if there is.
Probably. That's probably why it's you probably turned it off 30 seconds in.
Yeah.
Didn't get to hear the dumb flute come in.
Standing on one leg, playing the fucking flute. What get a off.
Jerk.
Ridiculous.
The fool. The man's a fool. All right. Ah, come on.
What are you doing?
I'm waking at work.
So what do we
he's
got?
He's looking
here
at racist YouTube comments.
Do we know who was playing flute on that?
I do not know. Was it that guy? Was it just a studio guy, or was it that guy Brooke that was in the band?
It might have been that guy.
Was a multi-instrumentalist.
He did the organ and the flute and stuff. I think that might be correct.
The male organ and the skin flute.
No, I don't know who was on lead guitar.
One in each hand.
Yeah, right.
I don't know who was playing lead guitar, but it was not too far off of an A-style lead.
That was pretty, I tell you, I liked the percussion.
Right.
Thought that was pretty cool. I didn't dislike that as much as I thought I would.
But you do get the idea, like, okay, they had this song, and they're like, you know what? If we strip this down, we can come up with something pretty new and pretty fresh and pretty cool and different. Because this was kind of what was happening then.
It's
kind of
like how, you know, throughout their career with Roth, Van Halen just was continuously pulling songs out of their very, very early career, or bits of songs,
right,
and crafting them into something else.
It's weird how that happens. You can come up with like 1,000 riffs when you're 20 to 22, and then you just
You burn out.
Reuse them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, well,
fill them out a little bit.
The latest album was all old stuff, so, you know.
The one with Tattoo, right? Isn't that what it's called?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was
listening to this song back-to-back with the Kiss version, it's something that I believe in very much, is that just because you can do a sweet-sounding harmony doesn't mean that you should and that it's right for the song.
Yeah, it's not always
and
right.
And stripping that away from the vocals definitely worked. And in this song, I mean, it sounds nice, but it's much more effective in the Kiss version.
Well, it wouldn't work on a heavier, more bludgeoning take on it, which is what Kiss did. But no, that's kind of an interesting nugget. I'd never heard that before. So
yeah, there are a couple of them. What's the other Lover All I Can is one?
That one's closer to the...
Yeah, but there are a couple that are Kiss songs.
There's one I really like that I was hoping we could eventually do, but it's not. It's only on the box set. It's not on an official album.
Oh, really? Which one is it?
Keep Me Waiting.
Huh.
I really like that one, but who knows? Maybe my birthday will be coming around and I'll get to pick.
You know, I heard
like
that's
that.
Coming up this year.
I heard it comes up this year.
A couple episodes away. What, maybe 3-4 episodes away?
Could be.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll pick Samurai Sun for my God.
I still haven't heard it.
I've heard part of it.
You can probably just find it on YouTube, right?
Yeah.
Or is it
I'm
not
sure
on there?
It's on there.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's some ridiculously priced import maxi single you can buy.
Could you just buy it on iTunes for like $1.29?
I think you probably can buy the song by itself.
Not
maybe
interested.
Maybe I'll just do that. Chris, I'll buy it for you.
Don't want it.
I'll get you a $1.29 iTunes gift card.
I don't want it.
Fair enough. You can't argue with a man who says that. I know. I know better than anyone. All right. Well,
so
we're pushing
cotton.
Our touching cotton.
I don't know why I had to go so lowbrow there, but
I'll what better depths to end this episode on?
Yeah. Well, let's get out of here. So I hope you had a nice St. Patrick's Day, or you have one,
or
whatever.
You will have one.
We'll have one if you're into that. Is that that's like more of an American thing?
I think
that's
a thing that Americans are dumb and we do this. And
everyone
probably thinks we're dumb for doing it.
Yeah. I just had a flashback.
Right.
We are.
I just had a flashback to last year where Chris went on a rant and talked about those plastic bowler hats that everyone wears. That happened last year, didn't it?
Yeah, if it's St. Patrick's Day, I'm railing against lame.
In an American supermarket, when you walk by the end cap that has the quote-unquote St. Patrick's Day merchandise, more often than not, you're going to roll your eyes. And
pandering just, nonsense.
You might be utterly disgusted at a certain point, which I've felt a couple times this year.
Yeah. But I could go for some corned beef, I'll tell you that much.
Beefy.
But that works all year on beef.
Beefy.
All right. Purple. Purple beef.
What do you mean it sounds kind of rough? So what? Send that to them. Send what we have.
That could
what
be
do you
the
mean
bumper
it sounds
for the
rough?
Plan.
I've heard it. It sounds fine.
Okay, I don't think I've heard it. Did we listen to it ever?
We listen to it on the show.
Just send it. Who cares?
Right. That's what they're getting.